All right, we're going to get started again. Next case on the docket is case number 19792. This is an application of SM Energy Company for an order amending the applicable orders for Ambrose, West Ambrose, and Colgan Bakken pools to allow up to 8 horizontal wells to be drilled on some or all the 1,280-acre spacing units within the pools, and to establish 22 overlapping 2,560-acre spacing units, Divide County. All interested parties, please come forward.
Madam Examiner John Morrison, P.O. Box 2798, Bismarck, North Dakota, appearing this matter on behalf of SM Energy Company.
Lawrence Bender, P.O. Box 1855, Bismarck, appearing in this matter on behalf of Murex Petroleum Corporation.
Okay, and Mr. Morrison, you said your first witness was Mr. Herringer?
Yes, it is.
Mr. Herringer, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Do you promise to tell the truth in this case?
I do.
Thank you.
Sean, would you state your name, tell us by whom you're employed, in what capacity, and give us your business address, please?
My name is Sean Herringer. I'm employed by SM Energy, and it's 550 North 31st Street, Suite 500. Billings, Montana, 59101, and I'm a senior landman.
And, Sean, have you previously testified for the commission as an expert witness and had your qualifications accepted?
Yes, sir, I have.
And have you prepared some land exhibits you're going to sponsor today in this case?
Yes, I have.
I'll offer the further testimony. This witness, I'm an expert.
Motion granted.
Sean, let's turn to Exhibit A and tell us what you're showing on Exhibit A, please.
Okay, basically I've got Exhibit A's and A1. And they show a set of 2560 spacing units outlined and numbered in blue. And then I have on A1, I show 2560 spacing units numbered and outlined in red.
And these are overlapping spacing units, and that's why you've shown them on two separate land plats. Is that correct?
Right. Right. It's best to put these side by side so you can kind of follow where I'm going with as far as Exhibit A2, showing the majority interest in these spacing units.
Okay, and then let's tell us what you've shown on A2 then.
Okay, basically I've shown a summary ownership, to follow in number one in blue, number two in red, kind of in that order. But basically, I've gone through and each one of the 2560 spacing units, and over to the left-hand side, basically to show that SM Energy has the majority interest in each one of those spacing units. So I'll go through this. As number one, SM Energy has a 79% majority. Number two, SM Energy has 73.64% majority. Number three, SM Energy has a 55.325% majority. Number four, SM Energy has a 64.76% majority. Number five, SM Energy has a 76.73% majority. Number six, SM Energy has a 59.1748% majority. Number seven, SM Energy has a 57.1659% majority. Number eight, SM Energy has a 71.2436% majority. Number nine, SM Energy has a 66.73% majority. Number 10, SM Energy has an 81.5885% majority. Number 11, SM Energy has a 60.2576% majority. Number 12, SM Energy has an 84.9941% majority. Number 13, SM Energy has an 88.7398% majority. Number 14, SM Energy has a 91.3258% majority. Number 15, SM Energy has a 92.6% majority. Number 16, SM Energy has a 78.5218 majority. Number 17, SM Energy has a 71.6865% majority. Number 18, SM Energy has an 87.5% majority. Number 19, SM Energy has an 86.875% majority. Number 20, SM Energy has a 60.6932% majority. Number 21, SM Energy has a 49.6653% majority. And number 22, SM Energy has a 62.2858% majority. And that was 2560.
And so if I'm looking at this correctly, then SM has more than 50% in every one of the 2560s except one. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And SM is also the largest owner in each of the existing 1,280-acre spacing units and the more than 50% owner in the vast majority of those. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And have you had discussions with other operators or with other working interest owners in these spacing units?
Yes, I have. I visited with Samson, Crescent Point, American Eagle, and also with Murex.
And now Murex is here today, but have any of the others, or are they objecting to what you're requesting?
No, none of the other three have objected. They support it.
And with that, I don't have any further questions of the land witness.
Mr. Bender, any questions?
Yes. Mr. Herringer, as I understand SM's request in this matter, it's twofold. You're asking for increased density on the existing 1280s, is that correct?
That's correct.
And you're also asking the commission to create some 2560s to allow the drilling of what I'm going to call section line wells, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And is it a fair statement that on the 2560s that you're requesting, that you had on the various A exhibits, I think it was 22, that you do not have common ownership across the 2560, is that correct?
Wait.
Pardon me?
You mean common ownership?
Across the 2560. You have diverse ownership across those 2560s, is that correct?
Yes, diverse.
Okay. And if I have questions with respect to where wells will be located on these 2560s, should I be addressing those to a subsequent witness, or can you answer those questions?
I would defer that to a subsequent witness, Bob Bachman.
Okay. And you testified that you have had conversations with other working interest owners other than Murex, and they had no objection to SM's request. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Were those discussions had by you, or were they had by other SM employees?
It was by me.
Okay. And in those discussions with other working interest owners, did you have specific discussions with respect to the location of the section line wells?
With the exact location, just basically, you know, there might be a little area, you know, side to side, but no, we didn't really discuss footages.
So you did not have discussions with other working interest owners indicating that your section line wells could be as far as 400 feet either side of a section line, did you?
Oh, I did.
Okay.
With American Eagle, I had that discussion, and with Samson.
I'm sorry, with who?
With American Eagle, I had that discussion.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I'm getting feedback, guys, so I'm having a little...
I don't know if that's from my mic or John, can you turn yours off for just a second? Okay, is that better? Hello?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, you said you had specific discussions with these other working interest owners with respect to the fact that some of these wells would be located as far as 400 feet from the section line?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And did any of those working interest owners raise the issue that there may be some correlative rights problems with locating the wells either side of that section line as far as 400 feet?
The only one that brought that up was with Murex.
Okay. And what was your response to Murex when Murex brought it up?
I basically listened to what they had to say because they had countered back and said that they wanted 100 feet on each side. And then I just said, I'll take it to our management.
Okay, and did you take it to your management?
Yes, I did.
And did management reject it?
Yes.
And why did management reject it?
I would.
If you know.
I'd like to defer that to reservoir management or geology.
Okay. But did you have the discussions with management?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We had a conference call.
Yeah. And do you know why management rejected it?
We don't think it's appropriate.
That's what management told you?
Yes.
Was management more specific than just saying we don't think it's appropriate?
Well, they threw out ideas as to acceptable footages, what we would like to have and what we think we need on certain locations or certain spacing units. So we knocked around a lot of ideas.
Okay, no further questions.
Any questions from the staff?
Sean, this is Bruce Hicks. Can you tell us why you need the flexibility of being as far as 400 feet away from the section line?
Yes. Bruce, can I defer that to Bob Bachman?
Bob's going to discuss in detail where the wells will be located and what the rationale is behind that.
That would be fine. Thank you.
Mr. Bachman, are you on the line?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Do you promise to tell the truth in this case?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Bob, would you state your name for the record, tell us by whom you're employed, in what capacity, and give us your business address, please.
Yeah, my name is Bob Bachman, senior geologist for SM Energy, 550 North 31st Street, Suite 500, Billings, Montana, 59101.
And have you previously testified for the commission as an expert witness and had your qualifications accepted?
Yes, I have.
And have you prepared some exhibits you're going to sponsor today?
Yes, I have.
And those have been prepared either by yourself or under your control and supervision, is that correct?
Correct.
I'll offer the further testimony. This was an expert.
Motion granted.
Bob, let's turn to Exhibit B and tell us what you're showing on Exhibit B, please.
Okay, Exhibit B is structure map, top of the base left salt. And the reason why I use the top of the base last salt is because we have a lot more shallow control to get a structural picture out here. The Bakken should be identical. Essentially, we're showing south dip, monoclinal dip. Also on here, we have outlined in blue the current field outline and names. Current horizontal wells are shown in black. And then, of course, yellow is our current leasehold.
Let's continue on with the next exhibit, Exhibit C.
Okay, Exhibit C is the upper Three Forks main reservoir. It's a gross isopach. Contour interval here is 2 feet. It shows that the reservoir generally thickens to the southeast, although we do have a little thicker area shown in sections 4 and 9 up in the north. In 163-100, but again, field outlines in blue along with their current names.
And Bob, is it correct that most of the horizontal wells in these fields that you're showing on this exhibit are drilled in and completed in the upper Three Forks?
Absolutely. A vast majority are, yes.
Can you maybe point out for the commission what the exceptions to that are?
In sections 6 and 7 of 163-99, we do have some Bakken wells drilled by Sampson. And I think a little bit further south and southeast, again, they have some Bakken wells. But really a vast majority are upper Three Forks penetration. We do have section 23, I think, is that Dupereau? I think it's like a Dupereau horizontal well. And then, of course, the vertical wells, Gooseneck and Ambrose are Dupereau wells.
Okay, let's continue on with Exhibit D and tell us what you're showing on Exhibit D.
Exhibit D, I did not outline overlapping 2560s because it just gets very, very confusing. So what I'm showing here is our proposed 2560-acre lease line well, and they're shown with a red dash. We've got 22.
And now these are kind of generalized locations that show the wells on the sections or on the common boundaries, is that correct?
Absolutely.
And in fact, is there going to be some variation in that location?
There will, and we'll discuss that on these upcoming exhibits.
And you said 22, but actually you are going to be asking for two wells to be allowed on each of these overlapping 2560s, is that correct?
Correct, and the reason we're doing this is because we still have a question, but we want the flexibility to be able to drill Middle Bakken should we find that Middle Bakken is economically capable of producing out here.
Okay. Now let's go on to D1 and tell us what you're showing on D1.
All right, Exhibit D1 shows the Three Forks wells only. And these are the infill wells along with the lease line wells, and they're shown with the red dash lines. And I think it's really important to note that we're spacing these wells equidistant from one another, and this is for reservoir management. What this particular exhibit shows is a full development scenario in the Three Forks reservoir.
Okay, and let's continue on to D2 then, and tell us what you're showing on D2.
All right, Exhibit D2 is all potential wells in the Bakken pool, meaning Middle Bakken as well as Three Forks. Now, if we find that the Bakken should be economic to drill and produce, then this is what the picture would look like. This is where we have seven wells per 1280. And I think it's important also to note that we want to stay equidistant, try to maintain like 12 to 1300 feet between the wells in the same pool, and approximately 600 feet more or less between any two wells. There are two specific areas within this full development scenario that we will have lease line wells up to 400 feet from the section line. Sections 1 and 12 of 163-100 and 17 and 18, 163-99, and we'll show that on the next exhibit.
I'm sorry. Bob, let's go on to Exhibit E and tell us what you're showing on Exhibit E.
All right. Exhibit E is an example of these two instances that I just previously spoke about. This 2,560-acre spacing unit includes 17, 18, 19, and 20 of 163.99. And essentially what we're showing here is that the lease line well between 17 and 18 would be about 400 feet away from the section line to stay equidistant between wells for proper reservoir management. In addition, you look at an overlapping 2560 to the west. This well would be approximately 200 feet away from the lease line. Conversely, over to the east, between 16 and 17, that lease line well would essentially be on the lease line. So this way, we're staying equidistant between wells for proper reservoir management and drainage.
Now, Bob, you also indicated that another one of these instances was in, what, sections 1 and 12 of?
1 and 12 of 163-100.
So it's to the north. If you look back on D2, it's to the northwest of this. Is that correct?
That is correct. So if you refer back to Exhibit D2, you'll notice that we have a well that's on the far east side of that 1280 that is closer to to the lease line than 1,300 feet. In that case, that would also push a lease line well further to the east, where we would need to drill that again to stay equidistant.
And now you're talking about the farthest east existing well in sections 2 and 11, is that correct? That's the one that's pushing your next well to the east, farther to the east?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And again, it's your goal here is to maintain a uniform or as uniform as possible distance between all the wells.
That's exactly right, and that's based on reservoir performance, microseismic, a lot of indicators that the proper way to develop this reservoir is to stay equidistant with our wellbores.
Now, Bob, let's look at Exhibit E again. Let's go ahead to E1.
Okay.
Tell us what you're showing on E1.
Sure. Exhibit E1, now again, should we find that the Middle Bakken is economic to produce out here, this is how it would look for all the wells to be equally spaced, including Middle Bakken. Middle Bakken wells are shown in a dashed blue. The Three Forks are dashed red. And then, of course, existing Three Forks are black. But what this essentially shows is that we would need, in these two specific instances, two wells per 2560, because for reservoir management, staying equidistant with our Three Forks wells approximately 12 to 1,300 feet apart, that would put a Middle Bakken well actually on the lease line. So we want to try to, again, maintain 12 to 1,300 feet between the wells in the same pool, and 600 feet more or less between any two wells.
Now, you indicated that you could probably comply with keeping a 200-foot setback from the common lease line for the Three Forks wells. Do you need additional flexibility in locating the any Middle Bakken wells that will be drilled on these 2,560-acre spacing units?
Well, I think we would also need that 800-foot corridor just to give us that flexibility for Middle Bakken on these 2560s as well.
And so depending upon where the Three Forks well is, you're going to need that additional flexibility in locating the Middle Bakken well on the 2560 to, again, maintain the relatively uniform distance between wells.
Absolutely, absolutely. We don't want to be forced to drill closer to a well than what we think is proper. We want to have the flexibility to do this right, and that's equally spaced.
Now, can you summarize for the commission staff what you think would be workable if they see the need to put some restrictions on well locations in the order?
Well, I think what we want to do is have a 400-foot corridor, certainly in section 17 and 20, 163.99, and 1 and 12, 163.100, and, or excuse me, 800. Yeah, I'm sorry, 800. So 400 foot away from the lease line, just so we can make sure that all these wells are equally spaced and we are producing this reservoir to the best of our ability. So, again, our intent is to drill all these wells to where they're equidistant. We want to maintain wells in the same pool to be 12 to 1,300 feet apart. And we also don't want wells closer than 600 feet or so between any two wells.
And other than these two, 17 and 20, 1 and 12, you could operate under a restriction that would keep a 400-foot corridor or 200 feet on either side of the section of the common
absolutely.
Section.
Absolutely, for all the rest. Yeah, absolutely.
And then what do you think you need for the any middle Bakken wells that are drilled on these 2560s?
Yeah, the same.
And the same being the 400-foot corridor or the 800-foot corridor?
The 800-foot corridor.
Okay. And again, that's just necessary to maintain then the setback or the interwell distance between the Three Forks wells on the 2560.
Absolutely. We just need that flexibility to do this properly.
Okay, Bob, let's go ahead to Exhibit F and tell us what you're showing on Exhibit F.
All right, Exhibit F is a type log. It's actually a process log showing both the target for the Middle Bakken and the upper Three Forks reservoir out here.
And with that, I don't believe I have any further questions of the geologic witness at this time.
Mr. Bender, any questions?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry, is it Mr. Bachman?
Is it Mr. Bachman? Is am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Yes, you are.
Okay, thank you. First of all, on your Exhibit C, I see you're showing a gross isopach map for the upper Three Forks. Your request is also for middle Bakken wells. Is there any reason you didn't show a isopach map for the middle Bakken?
No, I just decided to use the main reservoir out here. We're still not sure about the economic viability of that middle Bakken.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about that. How many middle Bakken wells have been drilled in the fields that are under consideration today? And when I say middle Bakken wells, I'm talking about middle Bakken horizontal wells.
You know, I'm thinking three or four.
And can you point those out on Exhibit C?
I believe 16399, the 1286 and 7, 15 and 22. Currently, Sampson is drilling in 25 and 36. Of 163-101? Oh, excuse me, 163-100.
And what sections in there is Samson drilling?
25 and 36.
Okay.
And they're currently drilling.
All right. Of the wells that have been drilled and completed, what can you tell me about the productivity of those wells?
Well, it's still early, Larry, and I'm not sure. It looks like some wells are not so good, other wells might be economic, but it's still too early to tell.
Okay. And if we go back to your Exhibit E1, is it a fair statement that one of the reasons you're proposing your Three Forks well in this corridor that you've talked about, 400 feet either side of the section line, is that you would have a middle Bakken well on the section line? Is that correct?
That is correct, but I think we need to keep in mind that the equidistant spacing between Three Forks, which is the main reservoir out here, and that's our main focus.
Okay. Presuming a radial drainage, would your proposed Three Forks well located on here in section 17 and 20, would it drain more oil from 17 and 20 than 18 and 19?
You know, possibly, but, you know, I'm not so sure we're that smart in this reservoir. I think the important thing to keep in mind is that we're trying to stay equidistant because of what we see with the science that we already have to properly produce this reservoir.
Now, if the Middle Bakken is not viable, would there be any reason why you could not drill your Three Forks well on the section line?
Well, if I drill a Three Forks well on that section line, Larry,
the name is Lawrence, by the way.
Excuse me, Lawrence. I apologize.
That's all right.
If I drill a well that close, I am fracking into that well, and I'm not draining any reserves out of 17 either.
You're fracking into what well?
A current well, like, for instance, in our 2560 that I show on Exhibit E1, 17, 18, 19, and 20, the Torgerson 2-30 HNA well would be about 600 feet away from that section line well. and I would be fracking into that well.
Okay, I'm confused. If I look at your Exhibit E1, I see that the legend indicates that red wells and solid black wells are Three Forks wells, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so if you drill your Three Forks well on the section line between 17 and 18 and 19 and 20, you said it's going to frack into a well in what section, and then as a result of that not produce any oil from 17 and 20? You lost me there.
What I'm saying is that we would be getting too close to a current Three Forks well in the east half, the far east half of 18 and 19, to where we would be communicating with an existing Three Forks well.
Okay. What work have you done in this area to determine how far away you have to be from existing wells so that you don't have communication between horizontal Bakken wells?
We've done microseismic out here, and we have mapped our fracks.
And how far out laterally do your fracks go in a typical horizontal Three Forks well?
Probably 600 to 700 feet laterally on either side.
Okay. And what's the distance between the section line between 17 and 18 and 19 and 20 and your Three Forks well that is drilled and producing, which would be the first well to the east of the section line that I just described? Excuse me, to the west. I apologize. Thank you.
To the west. Lawrence, could you say that one more time?
Sure. I apologize. It was a poor question. We have a section line between 17, 18, 19, and 20, and I'm asking what the distance is to the west of the well that is producing in section 18 and 19 in the Three Forks.
I think if we were forced to drill on a section.
No, that's not my question. That's not my question. My question is how far is that producing well from the section line?
Approximately 600 feet.
Okay. So you could drill a Three Forks well on the section line or within a 100-foot corridor into section 17 and 20, and based on your microseismic studies out there, wouldn't have any impact on that producing well. Is that correct?
That's not correct. Actually, we would probably be fracking into the existing well to the west, and we would probably be leaving reserves untapped in 17 and 20.
Let's go to your Exhibit E for a moment. If we work from the west to the east, you have a well located, looks like it could be maybe 1,300. Well, you tell me, how far is that well from the west line, the existing Three Forks well on Exhibit E in Section 18 and 19, the well that's furthest west?
The 1,280-acre spacing unit you're speaking of in Sections 18 and 19, that far western well is a Torgerson 1419H, and it's approximately 1,350 feet away from the lease line.
No, that's not my question. My question is how far is that well away from the producing well to the east?
Our tow gets approximately 600 to 700 feet.
Okay.
And of course, you know, that was the first well honoring the 12-20 rule out here. And so this is kind of tool error, and this is the best we could do in this 1280 as we're starting to produce this reservoir and learning more about it.
And how about the heel? How far is your well away from the heel?
And the heel is probably 1,200 feet or so.
Okay, and then if you work further to the east, how far are the next two wells apart? It would be the second well from the west and the third well from the west. How far are those wells apart?
Well, they're probably on average at 1,200 feet or so.
Okay. So closer than you would typically want them because of the information you've obtained from your microseismic?
Unfortunately, you know, and again, that's the first well drilled in 1280, and then we come back in and do infills after we know more and learn more.
So is it a fair statement to say that you want one rule to apply when you're drilling your wells on 1280s, but you want a different rule to apply when you're drilling wells on 2560s?
No, I think we've learned a lot about this reservoir, and it's really our intent to stay equidistant for proper reservoir management.
Okay. And let's go back just to a moment to let's go back to your exhibit D1 for a moment. Those are all Three Forks wells that you're proposing on an increased density pattern as well as section line wells, is that correct?
Yes, that's just a portrayal. It's not indicated exactly where wells are going to be located. It just shows what full development scenario would be.
Okay. And would all those wells then, and I understand what you're saying is it shows full development, and they may not show exactly where those wells are going to be located, but would all those wells be located at least 1,220 feet away from existing or proposed Three Forks wells?
That's our intent for this Three Forks, is to stay 1,200 to 1,300 feet between wells.
Can you spoke a bit about what your microseismic told you about the frac length? That would be the created frac length. Can you tell us about the propped frac length? How far are you getting out the prop frac length?
You know, we're not sure. We have indications from microseismic, but it's still kind of anybody's guess. We're still thinking 600 to 700 feet laterally on either side of the laterals.
With the prop frac length. Is that right?
That's hard to tell, Lawrence.
Okay.
That's just what we assume, but we don't know.
And is the prop frac length going to give you a better idea of the area you're actually going to drain?
I think when we see the event and the final analysis of our fracs, everything seems to be fairly consistent that 1,200 to 1,300 feet between wells is a proper way to produce this reservoir.
Okay. I don't have any other questions at this time.
Any questions from the staff?
Bob, this is Bruce Hicks. Is there any way to monitor these wells to know how far your proppant is going out into your frac laterals?
You know, Bruce, it's really an assumption. To the best of our knowledge and the best way we can understand this science, that we can kind of see what events we get back from our fracs and our microseismic. And just really the best indication shows that, you know, we're fracking out 600 to 700 feet laterally on each side of the wellbores.
If your proppant doesn't go out all the way to the end of your fractures, will that fracture close where it's not propped open once you finish your frac job?
Well, you know, that's you know, it'd be pure speculation, but I can tell you, as we get deeper into the basin, even on the anticline where we've got a 0.7, a 0.8 frac gradient, yeah, those are going to be closing on you. But up here, I think, you know, we're just slightly overpressured, maybe a 0.55 or so. I think it would be less so in this scenario up here.
Do you plan to fracture, stimulate the offsetting wells, all these infill wells at the same time?
Yeah, I think certainly to do that for cost effectiveness.
So if you did that simultaneously, wouldn't you kind of relieve some of the problem of the distance between wells?
Well, again, I think that even as we're doing simultaneous fracs or fracs right after one another, I think from what we see with the best science we've got, that we're stimulating the rock appropriately and the interwell distances are appropriate from what we can tell with the best of our knowledge.
At one time, I thought you said you wanted two horizontal wells per 2560. Is that correct?
Well, that case, Bruce, would be if we find that the Bakken is economic to produce out here, which, you know, the jury's still out on that. If that becomes reality and we're able to produce the Bakken economically, then yes, we would need two wells per 2560 because we're now drilling horizontally in the middle Bakken and not the main Three Forks.
Good. Okay, thank you.
Bob, you spent a considerable amount of time on sections 17, 18, 19, and 20. What's the distance from the section line in sections 1 and 12 and 2 and 11 that Three Forks well would be from the section line?
You know, the same thing applies. We have a well on the east line, on the east side of section 2 and 11 that is approaching 600 feet or thereabouts from the east line. So, again, to stay equidistant for proper reservoir management, we're going to have to push our well, lease line well, to the east, the same scenario as 17 and 20. And it's only these two instances that we are requesting that.
Your distance between Three Forks wells and Middle Bakken wells is approximately 1,300 feet?
No, actually between Bakken and Three Forks, assuming the Bakken will be economic out here, will probably be approximately 600 feet. The wells in the same pool will be 1,200 to 1,300 feet.
The well in sections 2 and 11 that's shown as a solid line, that's a Middle Bakken or a Three Forks well?
No, these are Three Forks wells out here. We have not drilled a Middle Bakken out here yet. This is the main reservoir in that upper Three Forks shown on that type log on Exhibit F.
So on Exhibit D2 in sections 2 and 11, you have an existing Three Forks well that's approximately 200 feet from the section line, or 600 feet from the section line?
In 2 and 11 is what you said?
Yeah.
That is correct. The same scenario exists in 18 and 19 of 163.99.
So in sections 1 and 12, you'd want to push that well over approximately 400 feet from the line?
That's exactly right. And in these two instances, and again, we really feel with all indications, seismically, scientifically, as best as to our knowledge, that we need to keep these wells equidistant. And so in these two scenarios, two specific instances, we're going to have a well pushed further away from that section line.
Okay, thank you.
Bob, this is Lynn Helms. When you drilled the infill wells and fracked them in 2 and 11 of 163-100 and in 18 and 19 of 163-99, did you shut in the existing wells and monitor them?
Absolutely.
And did you observe frac fluid or frac sand, indications of communication?
Yeah, and Lynn, what I could do is defer those type of questions to Garth here. He can speak specifically to the frac fluid communication, so on and so forth.
Okay. He'll be the next witness.
Yeah, I saw you had a type curve there, but it doesn't answer that question, so thanks.
Any follow-up, Mr. Morrison?
No.
Mr. Hill, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Do you promise to tell the truth in this case?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Garth, do you state your name, tell us by whom you're employed and what capacity, and give us your business address, please.
Okay. My name is Garth Hill. I'm employed by SM Energy as a senior reservoir engineer. My business address is 550 North 31st Street, Suite 500, Billings, Montana, 59101.
And Garth, have you previously testified for the commission as an expert witness and had your qualifications accepted?
Yes, I have.
And have you prepared some exhibits you're going to sponsor today?
Yes.
I'll offer the further testimony. This was an expert.
Motion granted.
Garth, let's turn first to Exhibit G in the packet and tell us what you're showing on Exhibit G.
Okay. So Exhibit G shows a plot which includes the type curve versus production from four wells in a spacing unit that we previously infilled. This is the spacing unit that was originally drilled with the Torgerson 1419H, which is shown in with the red production curve. And I want to point out one typo on this, the heading of this plot. It should read sections 18 and 19, 163 north, 99 west. I apologize. So this is monthly oil production versus months of production, and these wells are all shifted back to time zero so that I can compare them to the type curve that I've developed for the Three Forks Reservoir in this area. The type curve is represented by the dashed blue line, and that's the recovery of approximately 375,000 barrels of oil. You can see that the infill wells, colored in green, purple, and the lighter blue, all come in approximately at or above the type curve. And the average production of the three infill wells is captured in the black, solid black curve, which can be easily be compared to the type curve. So this indicates to me that these wells are economic, which is why I've shown them as an exhibit. I just want to establish that Three Forks wells drilled at this density, at least based on early time data, do appear to be economic with their current parameters. These wells are, as Bob indicated, were approximately 1,100 to 1,200 feet apart, except for where the toe got close between the 1419H and the 1419HN. And this is approximately 320-acre spacing. We have some other infill tests in the West Ambrose field in section 2 and 11, 163-100. But the production data is very early, so I did not include a plot of those. But they also indicate that this approximate spacing is economic. I think that covers this exhibit. Okay. You know, Bob talked about some of the things. Go ahead.
Garth, just a couple questions on it. First of all, the wells that you're showing on Exhibit G, those are the same wells that Bob discussed on Exhibit E in that section 18 and 19, right?
That's correct, yes.
And Lynn had a question for Bob that he kind of deferred to you, and that was whether or not you observed any frac interference when you were fracking the infills. Can you comment on that issue?
Yes, I'll speak to that. We did observe pressure communication. We shut in the existing 1419H producer, and we also shut in the Radnick well to the east, located in section 17 and 20. We observed direct frac pressure communication, you know, during the frac job from the backside. We were monitoring the backside pressure in the 1419H. We also injected chemical tracers on the infill wells in the frac, included with the frac fluids, and then samples during flowback in the existing wells, as well as the infill wells. And the chemical information also indicated that we had frac communication between wells. In addition, we also had produced fluid communication in the early time flowback period, the first couple months in the infill wells. The strongest level of communication was between the 1419H, which is located in the farthest west well in 18 and 19, and the 1419HN, which is the next well to the east. These also happen to be the closest wells together at the toes because of the orientation that the original 1419H was drilled in. There was no communication that we found between the furthest east well in that unit and the Radnick well in 17 and 20. However, we did microseismic, which I didn't mention, that corresponded to the chemical pressure and fluid communication we observed between the wells in 18 and 19. With all that said, the wells are all economic at the type curve, so we believe that the interference is most likely going to be just early time in the frac, but it's not going to affect the economic performance of the wells.
But does that information confirm your opinion that you should maintain something in the 1,100 or more interwell distance between wells in the same reservoir to the extent possible?
Yes, it does. In the portions of wellbores where the interwell distance was lower than 1,000 feet, we had a much higher level of interference, which we determined is not nearly as desirable as the minor interference that we observed when the wells were spaced 1,100 feet apart or more.
If you get substantial frac interference between the infill wells, will it reduce your overall production from the field?
It may reduce overall production from the field. In some cases, we've actually seen positive production interference early on, but of larger concern is if we space wells too close together, it may affect our frac geometry, as fracs may tend to grow towards areas of lower reservoir pressure where there's depletion, and then we may end up understimulating areas that are not as depleted. And so in order to stimulate the largest amount of area, we're trying to maintain equidistant spacing and not try to hug up too close to areas that have some depletion. Does that answer your question?
I'm sorry. Garth, let's go on to Exhibit H and tell us what you're showing on Exhibit H.
Okay. Exhibit H are the standard reservoir data, volumetrics, and economic data for both Three Forks, and now I'm including some Bakken wells additionally. Starting with the Three Forks, with the reservoir parameters I have listed, 12 feet thickness, 8% porosity, 70% estimated oil saturation. I calculated an oil in place of 5.1 million barrels. Utilizing the type curve based on performance in the field, the recovery is 375,000 barrels of oil for a 7.3% recovery factor from just the 12 foot thick Three Forks. I've also gone ahead and done some estimated data for the Bakken based on log calculations and also some of the early producing wells in this area with very limited data. The porosity appears to be slightly lower, and the oil saturation is also lower at 50%. However, the thickness is much greater at 55 feet. Using the same similar parameters, we have more oil in place at 14.7 million barrels. However, as I said, based on limited performance data, the recovery appears to be lower. I've developed a very preliminary type curve that indicates the recovery would be 300,000 barrels of oil, which would be equivalent to about 1.8% recovery factor. So I've gone ahead and used this information in addition to our estimated cost to generate economic results. Assuming an investment of $7 million for both the Three Forks and Bakken wells, and operating expenses of approximately $8,700 a month, and the recoveries already mentioned, with oil prices, you know, effectively at 80 and gas at 3 starting out, the rate of return for the Three Forks would be 42% and it would be 25% for the Bakken, and the payouts would be 2.1 years and 3.1 years, respectively. I also wanted to give a very, very brief update on our gas sales status. You know, as I have mentioned previously, we do have a gas purchase agreement signed with One Oak. They are installing lines and equipment as we speak. We are hoping that all of these wells will be connected to gas sales by September 2013. I've also attached an example wellbore schematic from the road 4-29H just to show what a typical well would look like for all of these proposed infill wells.
Garth, is it your opinion that drilling additional wells on the existing 1,280-acre spacing units will recover incremental oil and gas otherwise would not be recovered?
Yes.
It'll thereby prevent waste?
That's correct.
And is it your opinion that drilling additional wells on overlapping 2,560-acre spacing units, as described in the exhibits, will also recover incremental oil and gas otherwise would not be recovered?
Yes, that is my opinion.
And it'll thereby prevent waste. Is that correct?
That's correct. If we follow the current setbacks and have to stay 600 feet from the line in either direction, we will most likely not drill wells that are closer than 1,000 feet apart, which would thereby leave oil behind and reduce the recovery from the field, which would result in waste.
And do you agree that proper reservoir management requires that the wells be equidistant to the extent possible?
Yes, that is my opinion.
And that will maximize your recovery and prevent waste, is that correct?
That's correct.
And in your opinion, will the 2,560-acre spacing units you're recommending protect relative rights?
Yes, they will.
I don't have further questions. We offer the exhibits.
Any objection to the exhibits? Exhibits will be received. Mr. Bender, do you have questions for Mr. Hill? You got to turn your mic on, though.
Mr. Hill, let's go back to, I know you didn't discuss this exhibit, but Exhibit E, and there is a so-called section line well that is located between 17 and 18 and 19 and 20 that is depicted approximately 400 feet to the east of the section line. Do you see that well?
Yes, I follow.
And if you presume a radial drainage, will that well recover more oil from section 17 and 20 than it will from section 18 and 19?
It's definitely a strong possibility.
Okay. And if that's the case, how can you say that your application protects correlative rights?
Well, the ownership would be split between the two units.
Okay.
And basically, if we're not allowed to drill equidistant between the two wells, we will, this area will end up being completely undrilled, which would result in waste.
So I understand you may have a waste argument, but how does your application protect correlative rights if that well will drain more from 17 and 20 than it will from 18 and 19?
Well, I guess there would be an issue there if you could prove that.
Okay.
More drainage.
Okay. Let me ask you another question. Is from a correlative rights standpoint, if that well was drilled 100 feet either side of the section line, and you presume radial drainage, would that better protect correlative rights?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
If you drilled the well that's depicted on your exhibit E closer to the section line, and let's just say within a window of 100 feet either side of the section line, and you presume radial drainage, would that better protect correlative rights?
Yes, it would, but we would not drill such a well.
Okay.
As it would not be economic, in our opinion.
Okay. And let's go back to your exhibit G, which the purpose of this exhibit is just to demonstrate what sort of productivity you're seeing from the wells in relationship to other wells drilled in the unit, or why don't you tell me what the purpose of this exhibit is?
The purpose of this exhibit is to illustrate that infill wells drilled at the given spacing are economic.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Okay, the purpose of Exhibit G is simply to illustrate that what we already have a history of drilling wells at the approximate 1,100 foot spacing, that they are economic.
Okay. Do you know,
Mr. Hill, do you know if, or let's strike that, is it possible that the fracking of your wells in the Three Forks is fracking up into the Middle Bakken, and that you're recovering hydrocarbons from the Middle Bakken as well as the Three Forks from your wells?
It is possible, but we don't feel that we have a large amount, if any, recovery from the Bakken, simply because the Middle Bakken calculates a higher water saturation than the Upper Three Forks.
And what you're saying is that you're not getting that greater water cut, so you believe that you're not recovering from the Middle Bakken? Is that what you're telling me?
What I'm saying is if we're recovering from the Middle Bakken, it is minimal, because we're not seeing the kind of produced water cut that you would expect to see from a higher water saturation reservoir.
And if you are recovering some hydrocarbons from the Middle Bakken, will that make it less likely that you would drill Middle Bakken down the road, because you would have recovered some of those hydrocarbons with your Three Forks wells?
Yes.
Okay.
But we have yet to determine how much we would be recovering from the Middle Bakken.
So insofar as your application relies on the fact that you'd be drilling Middle Bakken as well as Three Forks wells, and given the fact that those Middle Bakken wells could be uneconomic, that part of your application would be flawed. Is that correct?
No, this application does not rely on Middle Bakken wells to justify the Three Forks spacing. The Three Forks interwell spacing is can stand alone as being the optimum spacing we've determined to maximize recovery.
Just a few more questions, Madam Examiner. With respect to your Exhibit H, Mr. Hill, you show oil saturation in the Middle Bakken of 50%. Is that right?
Yes.
And is that based on producing wells in the area, or is that based on logs?
That's just estimated from logs.
Okay. And so if you got a 50% oil saturation, you'd have a 50% water saturation or water cut. Is that right?
Not necessarily.
Okay. Why not?
Because you don't – water cut doesn't necessarily correlate with FW.
Okay.
It's nice if it does, but you have relative permeability differences between oil and water. And you're also using log data, which is, you know, your calculations or estimates of what's in place.
Have you done
them to always be entirely accurate?
Have you done calculations of water saturation?
I'm using Bob Bachman's calculation.
And what were his calculations for water saturation?
Of water saturation?
Yes.
For the Bakken?
Yes.
50%?
Okay.
50 to 60?
So I asked you if it was a 50% oil saturation, it would be 50% water saturation. You said no. So that answer is incorrect. Is that right?
I guess I misunderstood your question. Yeah.
That's fine. Your initial GOR, where did you get that information from?
We have some production data for some of the earliest wells we drilled in this area, that where the wells were tied into Sterling Energy gas sales before their small line was loaded up. And based on that total flow data, my estimate for the GOR is 550 standard cubic feet per barrel. Now, this is as good a data as I have, because now all the wells and most of the wells in the area are flared, and I don't believe the flared gas estimates are nearly as accurate as total flow data.
And you have an EUR of a Middle Bakken well of 300,000 barrels of oil. Where did that information come from?
That is based on very preliminary, a very preliminary type curve that I created based on some of the two of the Sampson wells that were drilled in Ambrose Field, which are the two wells are located in 6 and 7. One is located in 6 and 7, 16399. I guess that would be West Ambrose. And then the other is located in 15 and 22, 16399.
And how many months of production do you have on those wells?
Only three. So as I said, it's very preliminary.
That's all the questions I have.
Any questions from the staff?
Garth, this is Bruce Hicks. You had indicated you have a lot of microseismic in the area. Can you design a frac job so your fractures grow upward and downward into the middle Bakken instead of laterally?
I don't believe that we have enough control over what our frac is doing to design a frac to do such a thing. I mean, nor do we have a high level of confidence in our ability to monitor frac growth in the vertical direction with our microseismic. With our surface array microseismic, we believe the data is much more accurate in the X and Y, you know, the north, south, east, west direction than it is in the vertical direction. So no, I don't believe that we can make a design and with high confidence that we think will grow more vertically than east-west.
It's been said that SM Energy has no Middle Bakken wells drilled in this area. When would you plan to drill the section line wells in the Middle Bakken?
That we would drill those after we have additional well results in the Middle Bakken. We are participating in a Middle Bakken well that Sampson's drilling in 25 and 36, 163-100. And there are also additional wells coming off confidential status in the area, as well as some core information that we'd like to look at. So we feel that, you know, realistically, if the Middle Bakken does become an economic target, we would probably start drilling some Middle Bakken tests in late 2014.
But would you drill the section line wells first, or would you drill in between the existing Three Forks wells on 1280s first?
Most likely, we would drill in between Three Forks wells and the existing 1280s first.
Okay, thank you.
Any follow-up, Mr. Morrison?
Yeah, a few questions. Garth, let's turn back to Exhibit E for a moment. Mr. Bender asked a number of questions saying, presuming radial drainage. You're familiar with the concept of radial drainage, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
Do the horizontal wells in the Three Forks in this area produce without hydraulic fracturing?
They do not.
So production is dependent upon hydraulic fracturing?
It is.
Is it reasonable to assume radial drainage when you have production dependent upon hydraulic fracturing?
I don't believe so. No.
Let's talk about moving that well in 17 and 20 over onto the common section line. What's going to happen to your fracs when you frac into that well located on the section line? Will it frac equally on both the west side and the east side of the well, or will it frac preferentially on one side of the wells if you do that?
Based on the data that we have, we believe that the fracs would preferentially grow to the west and not nearly as much to the east, which would leave a large unstimulated area to the east. Additionally, we believe this would cause a large amount of negative interference to the existing well in 18 and 19, and it would also most likely result in an uneconomic well on the section line, and we would avoid even drilling such a well.
If the well wasn't drilled, you would leave hydrocarbons in place unrecovered, is that correct?
That's correct.
And that would be waste.
Yes.
Let's look at the well in the west half of 18 and 19. That's the well with the kind of northeasterly orientation, the original well?
Oh, yes. The Torvison 14-19H. Okay.
Is that well going to recover more hydrocarbons from the west half of sections 18 and 19 than it is from the east half of sections 18 and 19?
That's a good question. I'm not sure that we know, you know, the exact drainage area of these wells or whether it will preferentially drain one side more than the other.
But it's probably reasonable to assume it is going to drain more from the west half than from the east half?
It's reasonable to assume, as there is a larger area that has not yet been drilled with infills, yes.
But the commission has a well-established practice of establishing 1,280-acre spacing for these horizontal wells and allowing multiple wells on the 1,280-acre spacing use. Is that correct?
Yes.
So that causes the same correlative rights issue that Mr. Bender raised with respect to the well on the 2560. Is that correct?
Yes.
Is there something that has to be accommodated in the pattern of development?
Yes. You know, it's unfortunate that we had to start with our first wells in the pattern that they were drilled in because it just creates some difficulties when coming back and infilling and trying to maintain equidistant spacing between wells. So we're trying to accommodate for the way that the original wells were drilled and given that some of them were drilled with the 2-degree tool error and not straight north-south.
Okay. With that, I have no further questions.
Mr. Bender, any further questions?
Nothing further.
Any further witnesses?
No, I'm sorry. No, we have no further questions.
Mr. Bender, do you have witnesses?
Yes, I do.
First witness is Dave Elder, who is present in the hearing room.
Mr. Elder, I'll have you raise your right hand. Promise to tell the truth in this case?
Yes.
Thank you.
Dave, would you state your full name for the record, please, and spell your last name?
Dave Elder, E-L-D-E-R.
And Dave, by whom are you employed in what capacity?
Murex Petroleum, land manager.
And in that capacity, you testified before the commission previously?
No.
What I'd like you to do is briefly highlight for the examiner your educational background and work experience.
I have a PLM degree from the University of Houston. I have 20-plus years experience.
And in preparation for today's hearing, have you made a thorough study and review of all the relevant land matters concerning the request by SM?
Yes.
And have you assisted in the preparation of some exhibits you intend to sponsor?
Yes.
Offer the further testimony of this witness out of an expert.
Motion granted.
Dave, let's turn to the Exhibit 2 in the packet. Of our packet.
Of our packet.
Okay, and tell me what Exhibit 2 depicts with respect. Well, first tell me what it is, and then tell me what it depicts with respect from a land perspective.
Basically, the blocks crosshatch show areas that we, in yellow, that we have an interest in, and that's basically what he's showing.
Okay. And there's been a lot of discussion here this morning with respect to two overlapping 2560s. Perhaps you could just go to SM's, or you can utilize this exhibit, I guess, and one had to do with, I believe, sections 1 and 12 is a 1280, and 2 and 11 is a 1280, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, and perhaps you could just provide us with some information with respect to what Murex's interest, working interest, is in that particular 2560. Or you could break it up by 1280s first and then 2560.
Okay. And the 1 and 12, the 1280 for 1 and 12, we have a
9.4% of working interest, and in 2011 we have a 0.1% working interest.
Okay. And because you have a much greater working interest in sections 1 and 12, Murex is concerned with respect to the placement of the so-called section line well. Is that correct?
Correct. Okay.
And the next witness is going to get into that in greater detail. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And if SM were to agree to put its section line wells within a window of 100 feet on either side of the common section line, would that alleviate Murex's concerns?
Yes.
Okay. And then there was a great deal of discussion here today with respect to another spacing unit, and it was depicted on Exhibit E. And let me just get to there. And that was sections 17 and 20 and 18 and 19, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And does Murex own any interest in that proposed 2560?
In 17 and 20 and no.
Okay. And with respect to the other interests that Murex owns in this area that's under consideration today, that is accurately set forth in SM's exhibits, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. That's all the questions I have for the land witness.
Mr. Morrison, any questions?
Dave, let's look at 14 and 23 for a minute. Do you know what tracts Murex owns in sections 14 and 23?
What tracts? No.
That's your largest interest in the field, is that correct?
Correct.
You have like basically 33% in sections 14 and 23?
Correct.
Okay. No further questions.
Any questions from the staff? Next witness?
Okay. Next witness is Glenn Kemp.
Mr. Kemp, can you raise your right hand?
Yeah.
Promise to tell the truth in this case?
I do.
Thank you.
Glenn, would you state your full name for the record, please? Spell your last name.
My name is Glenn Kemp, K-E-M-P.
And Glenn, by whom are you employed in what capacity?
Employed with Murex Petroleum. I'm a reservoir engineering manager.
And have you testified before the commission previously?
Yes, I have.
Had your qualifications accepted that of an expert?
Yes.
Offer the further testimony of this witness, that of an expert.
Motion granted.
Glenn, let's go back to the packet of exhibits, and let's go to Exhibit 1. Tell me what Exhibit 1 is and why it's important to today's hearing.
Okay. Basically, Murex's heartburn on this and is protection of correlative rights for the mineral interest owners as well as work interest owners. When the hearing docket was sent out, there was no definition as far as how many feet from the section lines SM manager was looking to get. Basically, all Murex wants is and feels like for the mineral interest owners and for the working interest owners is a section line well be a section line well. And so basically here I'm showing an example. If there is no defined distances, but we can go ahead and say the defined distance is 400 feet because that's kind of what they're talking about. So let's say spacing unit A is a 1280 and spacing unit B is 1280 and they're both operated by Company X. Company X has 40% interest in one of them and 100% interest in the other. Now, as being both operated by the same company, you would expect frac jobs to be fairly similar, but for some reason, this is not a homogeneous reservoir, so the average rates in spacing unit A happen to be about 50% better than the average rates in spacing unit B. Now, what I'm talking about is peak rates, so that's the average peak month divided by the number of days it produced. And so Basically, if you combine these two into a 2560, obviously Company X would be the operator. Company X would have a 70% working interest. And they could come as they're proposing now, 400 feet over into the spacing unit A. And having a lateral 400 feet into spacing unit A, they would then have a 70% working interest instead of a 40% working interest. Not only that, but all the mineral interest owners from spacing unit A would be diluted in half. And a well positioned 400 feet into spacing unit A, we feel like 80 to 90% of those reserves are going to come from spacing unit A, and everybody in spacing unit A would be diluted.
Now, Glenn, Mr. Hill would probably suggest that even if you locate the well as you have it depicted on your Exhibit 1, you're still going to recover more oil from the eastern half of your 2560 than the western half of the 2560 because of the fact that you're too close to the existing producing well. Can you respond to that?
Well, I think, actually, I think he was saying the other way. He was saying that the lower, that would frack easier to the west. I don't think there's anything that we can prove whether it fracks to the east or to the west. Really, it has to do with pressure drawdown in the area of the well bores. So that has to do with how good the wells are, what the cum production is, basically the history of the well, how old are the producing wells. If the well over in spacing unit B is a newer well, then the well over in spacing unit is produced a year less than the well over in spacing unit A. And it's going to tend to frack towards where the lowest pressure is. So very much dependent on rock quality, on the amount of pressure drawdown that's taking place. You cannot make a universal comment that it's going to frack to the west or to the east easier.
Okay, let's go to Exhibit 2, and tell me what Exhibit 2 is.
Exhibit 2, basically, this is the way that we looked. We kind of combined their land look, and the crosshatches show the overlapping 2560s. So if you look there on top, on 16399, you'll see in 1 and 12, that's combined also with 2 and 11, but 2 and 11 also has crosshatched. So it's combined with 3 and 10 and so forth. You can just follow the pattern of the crosshatch and see the overlap in the 2560s. Now, one of the things that, of course, the working interest owners vary a whole lot across each of these. The mineral interest owners vary a whole lot across each of these. We believe a well placed 400 foot into a spacing, into either one of the spacing units, that's where the majority of the reserves are going to be drained. One of the examples that we can give as far as one of them that they talked about is in 16399, 1 and 12, Murex has a 9.4% working interest there. However, if you go over to 2 and 11, we have a 0.1% working interest, and that's 1280. So you put a well 400 feet over into 1 and 12, and all of a sudden we're diluted to 4.7%, as well as all the mineral interest owners. And in our opinion, that if you want to put a well within 400 feet of lease line, that should be an exceptional location within that 1280. And we should have 9.4%, and the mineral interest owners in 1 and 12 should have their full interest.
So in summary, Glenn, what you're suggesting is by combining some of these 1280s into 2560s and then allowing wells to be located 400 feet either side of the 1280 line inside the 2560, you're not protecting correlative rights, is that?
Not
is
at
that
all.
Okay, and that's because you have such a variance between the producing wells in the 1280s, is that correct?
Yes, you've got, let's take a look at that for a little bit. You know, basically you're working with the same operator should be the same type of frack for the most part. I know they're a little bit different vintages, but if you step across, if you take a look at in 1 and 12, you're looking at basically a fairly similar type well, about 600 barrel type well on Gulbertson 2-1 than you are in 2 and 11. So those wells aren't a whole lot different, but there's some examples that are a whole lot different. Let's go over to the southwest in 163-101 and take a look at section 13, and what would that be, 24 and 14 and 23. Well, the wells in 13 and 24 are basically 100% better wells than the wells over in 14 and 23. And and you can follow this across all throughout this. Basically, you're not working with a homogeneous isotropic type reservoir. You're working with a very anisotropic type reservoir, which in carbonates 400, 500, 600 feet away, you're working with a whole different world.
And Glenn, is it a fair statement that Murex does not oppose 2560s? Oh, so the drilling of section line
absolutely
wells?
Not. And whenever this comes to us forming 2560s in areas, we have absolutely no problem following this 200-foot window.
Okay. And that's really the request of Murex today, not that it opposed the 2560s, but that section line wells, in fact, be section line wells so that they're drilled in a window 100 feet either side of the common section line.
Exactly. That is correct.
And in your opinion, would requiring such a restriction of a 200-foot window on the common section line, will that better protect relative rights than the proposal that SM has made, where the wells could be as far as 400 feet from the section line?
Without a doubt, like we've discussed, you know, you cannot make an assumption that you're going to frack more easterly or westerly, and therefore, if you stay more towards that section line, most likely you're going to drain from both directions in equal amounts.
And does Murex have a position with respect, and this is a follow-up to Mr. Hicks's question, but does Murex have a position or opinion with respect to drilling the section line wells in the Middle Bakken?
Right now, we're not sure that the Middle Bakken is productive up here as far as economically productive. SM mentioned a couple of Samson wells, but there's also two other wells in the immediate area, one American Eagle well, one a Crescent Point well. Neither one look economic at this point. I think you're muddying the water by throwing Middle Bakken wells in here at this point.
So do you believe it may be premature for the commission to be addressing the issue of section line wells with respect to the Middle Bakken, and that might be better decided after there is some Middle Bakken development in this area?
Absolutely.
That's all the questions I have, Madam Examiner. We'd offer Exhibits 1 and 2.
Mr. Morrison, any objection to the exhibits?
No objection.
Exhibits will be received. Mr. Morrison, do you have any questions for Mr. Kim?
Yeah, a few. Glenn, you would agree that radial drainage is an appropriate assumption in this reservoir, is that correct?
No, with the horizontal well with fractures, you're talking about a bunch of small elliptical drainage type patterns that we think go equally into each direction.
So you agree that radial drainage is not an appropriate assumption in this reservoir?
Radial drainage is not appropriate, that's correct.
Do you agree, as a matter of general reservoir management, that it's optimal to maintain a uniform distance between wells to the extent possible when you're dealing with horizontal hydraulically fractured development as we are in this field?
If all the wells were the same vintage, if all of them had cummed the same amount, therefore if the reservoir pressures were the same in both directions, I would agree with that. Otherwise, I would not.
And you agree that when you do fracture stimulate, the fractures are going to tend to grow to an area of the reservoir with lower pressure, is that correct?
That would be correct.
And you would agree that you'll generally have lower pressure nearer to a producing well?
You'll have generally lower pressure, not just to a producing well, but the one that has cummed the most, and therefore its pressure transient has gone out much further.
So you get lower pressure by depletion, is that correct?
Correct.
And you get depletion by producing?
The more you produce, the more depletion.
And so you would agree as a general principle that your fractures are going to grow towards a producing well as opposed to the other direction towards an undeveloped portion of the reservoir?
Yes, if that were the case. I'm not sure there's any of those cases here.
Let's look at 14 and 23. You think there's a correlative rights problem if you're not restricted to the middle of the spacing unit. You would agree with me that the existing lateral in 14 and 23 is draining far more oil from the west halves of 14 and 23 than it is from the east halves of 14 and 23. Is that correct?
Well, I would agree that being that the well is positioned in the west half of 14 and 23, that it would be draining equally in that west half of 14 and 23.
And draining more from the west half of 14 and 23 than it is from the east half of 14 and 23?
In this case, yes.
But Murex has drilled a number of wells on 1,280-acre spacing, is that correct?
Sure.
And you would agree that correlative rights would probably be better protected if that well was based on a stand-up 640, the west half of 14 and west half of 23?
Stand-up 640.
Consisting of the west half of section 14 and the west half of section 23.
I'm not following your question.
Well, you agree that that well is likely recovering more hydrocarbons from the west half of section 14 and 23 than it is from the east half of 14 and 23,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, being where the lateral is positioned, it has to.
And so you would then agree that correlative rights would be better protected if you had a spacing unit consisting of the west half of 14 and 23 rather than all of 14 and 23, is that correct?
Well, I guess you could carry that across this whole map.
That's correct. And so you would agree that protection of correlative rights is a balancing test. You have to balance the protection of correlative rights with other factors like the prevention of waste. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely.
And you're not advocating that all of Bakken wells be spaced on stand-up 640s or even stand-up 320s, right?
No.
And you agree that if you drilled both a middle Bakken and a Three Forks well on the section line in your 200-foot corridor, you would run a substantial risk of having interference between the fractures in those two wells?
Well, you got a couple problems there. I don't think that there's any proof one way or the other whether you're communicating with the two. Therefore, if you weren't communicating, you got no problem there at all. But you also have a problem whether the middle Bakken is going to be economic at all. So whether you even drill that middle Bakken well at all.
How many wells has Murex drilled in this field?
In this field?
Yep. In any of these three fields, I guess.
None in these three fields, but we have drilled some nearby.
I don't have further questions.
Any questions from the staff?
Glenn, on your exhibit one, you're showing four sections here. Are the peak rates, are these the actual peak rates on those sections?
Actually, they're very close. I pulled this pretty much straight off of, if you look over on to the next exhibit two, you'll see, what are we, 15. 13 and 24, that is, and 163, 101, that's the 13 and 24, and then the 18 and 19, is basically 450 type wells, and the ones over in 1324 are basically 650 type wells. So it rates vary a whole lot. Quality of rock varies a whole lot.
And these peak rates, are they?
The peak rates, are they indicative of total reserves, EUR, that you would produce from the wells?
Yes, they are. The way I determine peak rate, and it's usually the month or the month after the frack, of course. It's the highest rate month with at least 20 days of production. So if it's been on for just 10 days, we feel like that's a skewed high number. So we try to do a normalization across everything, saying, okay, you got to have at least 20 days. What's the highest rate month divided by that number of days it actually produced? And yes, that very much is indicative of what the ultimate recovery is.
And when you did your analysis, did you make sure that the wells were drilled in the same zone within the Three Forks, and also that they were completed the same way when they stimulated them?
Well, they're all completed by the same company, and they're all fracked by the same company. We have not gone into detail to tear apart to see if they changed their frack program dramatically from one well to another.
I was looking at a couple wells on Exhibit 2. It's the Walter and the Lampert. See those two? They're in 13, 14, and 23, 24.
Yes, I see those.
And the well in the Lambert on the east side was completed in February of 2011. And the well in the west side there, the Walter, was completed in November, so several months later. Throughout the history of stimulation, there tends to be more stages per 1280 that are being completed, just generally speaking. Do you know if they were completed in the same stages on these two wells?
Well, most of all these wells, Bruce, in this area are within the last couple of years. And we track, and I could, you know, we'd go back and give you exact number of stages, because we track anyone in yellow we're in. And we track the exact number of stages, and the pounds and of proppant put in, the amount of gallons that's pumped. And no, I do not have that off my hand, but we have not noticed SM changing their program much within the last 2 years.
And you were talking about the wide variability between wells in the two 1280s. Couldn't you also argue that the production between the 640s that you're drilling in and the 1280 changes a lot?
Oh, absolutely. Your rock quality in carbonates change rapidly over a few hundred feet.
But it could also change within 100 feet, right?
They could, in carbonates, of course. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any follow-up, Mr. Bender?
No, I don't have any further questions.
Any further witnesses?
No further witnesses.
All right, then that will conclude our hearing in case number 19792.
Thank you.
Thank you.